This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You're listening to the Design Build Hunt podcast presented by Whitetail Partners. Here we cover all things whitetail property design, habitat improvement, and hunting strategy. Let's change your property for good. Welcome back to the Design Build Hunt podcast, which is brought to you by Whitetail Partners. Today I've got Greg Kazmierski from Ohio, Sam Billhorn from Wisconsin. Guys, glad to have you back on. Doing another design breakdown. I feel like it's been a minute since we've done a design breakdown. Is it just me or has it been a while?
Yeah, I think it has. I know I haven't been on one personally in a while. I got caught up in the grind there for a while and I haven't even been on a podcast. So I know for me, it's been a couple of months for sure.
Yeah, I think we're all caught up in the grind right now.
But plenty of designs in the bank, Josh. I think we can keep peeling through them throughout the summer.
Oh yeah, I agree. I'm excited to bring bring out a bunch more that I've done. I think there's a lot of cool stuff. I've had a lot of properties that were somewhat challenging with access. Sam, there's been some that I've run by you, like, hey, what do we need to do in this scenario with this kind of access just to get, you know, second opinion, a second set of eyes on something is oftentimes invaluable. but Greg, I'm excited for this property, probably more excited for this design than any of the other designs that we've talked about yet, because it answers a big question that we often get from guys who say, how small is too small when it comes to my piece of property? Like how big of a property do I have to have? Or if I only have 10 acres, 15 acres, 20 acres, is that enough for you to do anything with? And this design right here not only answers the question of is it enough, but these clients found success, you were saying, pretty quick with this. So break this property down for me and tell me the big features first. How big is it and what's going on in the area?
Yeah, so I can actually zoom out here a little bit to get started just to kind of give a background on the greater area. You're going to see this is right in the middle of ag country, very limited timber around. We have a few small plots around the client's property. But out of those plots, they're really just farm side wood lots where, you know, people have hunting blinds set up right on the wood line and they're hunting the fields during the firearm season. So as far as the habitat goes for miles in each direction, they are really the only ones that are doing any kind of habitat work. So that's an immediate draw. As we zoom back in, you're going to see that we have this waterway, which is a big concept of this design. But what else that does is it just creates a really good travel route for deer that don't reside right on the property, obviously it's going to be difficult to hold deer on a 10 acre parcel, but having a main waterway, that's one of those natural lines that deer will always like to follow. So there's going to be a lot of those non-resident deer that are going to be passing through. And just the fact that we improve the habitat is really going to influence those deer to spend more time on the property. So that's why we're going to see, you see a lot of different travel lines on the property. A majority of the property is designated for bedding or that sanctuary type feel. And I think the biggest thing to know on the small property, which I always tell people, whether we're putting a design together or just giving advice on these small properties, is discipline is arguably the most important thing. You have to understand what are the strong suits of your small property and only hunt those based off of those strengths. So we'll get into the strengths of this property. For some, it may be a pretty obvious thing of how we're going to approach this, but we'll definitely break that down as we keep going here.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the deer numbers on this property. You mentioned a pass-through property, but as we're zooming out, I'm like, man, this is the chunk of timber in the area. There's not a lot of cover. So the potential, I think, for, you know, having a lot of deer in daylight calling your property home is pretty high. So tell me about what the deer numbers are like in this area.
Yeah, so there's a lot of does, not nearly as many bucks, just with the nature of the surrounding area and there being so much food and improving that habitat that it's, you're going to house a lot of different doe families. We portioned off a large section of this property, as I mentioned, into that sanctuary type area. You know, really this whole western edge next to the big ag field to the west is all improved bedding areas that they don't ever go into. It houses a lot of does, which I think is okay because it gets bucks traveling through here at our main point on the north area. And then as they continue on down through the south, however they cross out of here, there's a lot of bucks that pass through. And that's always like one of my big things is that even if you don't have those bucks living on your property, if they know that there's doe families hanging out there, they're going to circle back during the fall time. And that's exactly what happened on this property this last hunting season.
Right. Right. So let's now talk about the basics of the design. Maybe break down, you know, big picture, what's going on this property?
Yeah. So big picture, obviously being around this much agriculture, it's very difficult to have that dominating food source. You know, we have this big field over to the east and we have another big field to the west. And if you look up, the field continues. So very hard to compete with that. So understanding that any of the food that we bring into the property is either just going to be a pass-through and a staging area as they enter or exit those ag fields, or potentially that late season food source that those ag fields aren't able to offer. So this small little plot you have up in this corner, you'll see this is actually the house where they live. So we added in this nice little screen cover to block that off and really secure this plot. But we kind of added the shape of this plot here so that way any deer that's living on the property and wants to exit out into this ag field for their evening feed, they kind of do so in a fashion where they're looping through the plot and then going out, and that puts us right in bull range. So as you can see when I come in here and zoom in a little bit, if a deer enters into this plot and loops through, they're going to loop through in a fashion that they're going to open up a really good shot for these guys as they're kind of passing through this plot. This other bigger plot, now this we did more of a late season blend in this plot, and that's actually where they had their success was during the late muzzleloader season. This turned into a hotbed of activity at the end part of the season, and once all of that gun pressure kind of weared the deer down, they found the best bedding up in here, and they were just constantly every single day in and out coming and feeding in this plot, and that's when they were able to fill their tag on the first buck on the property was during that muzzleloader season.
Wow. I'm curious, you know, in an area like this, obviously, once the crops come out, the crops are out and there's basically a wasteland around you. So you mentioned that you put that plot in a late season blend. What does that mean for you there in Ohio?
So this was mainly, I'm trying to remember exactly what they planted. I think they put brassicas in here. I can't remember exactly. But really focus on like what can we offer them that's going to be green and give them that those high quality food to get through those winter months. And right. But I'm pretty sure that's what that was. And it was just something that, like you said, like it turns into a wasteland. So what can we offer them here that the rest of the area isn't going to offer? And we checked that box and we gave them the security. And again, it was months and months on end of nobody messing with this property, which really allowed those deer to feel comfortable, and it ended up housing a buck in that later part of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. 10 acres, obviously difficult to hold deer there, but also difficult to keep fresh if you're not hunting it very, very carefully. What did you do on this property to keep this property fresh all season long, such that they're killing a buck in here in the late season? I mean, we're not talking, hey, we got, you know, lucky with an early season buck because it was our first sit. And we're not talking, hey, we got lucky during the rut, right? We're talking later on in the season. So deer felt comfortable here. When was it, December?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So we're talking December, deer still feeling comfortable on your 10 acres. So what did you do to keep this property fresh through the season?
Yeah. So the biggest thing was, I'm going to touch back on that discipline aspect here, is that we did not enter or hunt this property unless it was some kind of south or west wind where we were getting that dumping across the property out towards this creek. So that way that there was never any type of human scent within the property. The other thing that we did, you'll see this red line for our hunter access is right along the edge of this creek. We actually have an access point right here where they leave their kayaks tied up. Both these guys that own this property, they're mobile hunters, so they're in and out really easily. And they just hook up their kayaks and they enter into any of these spots along the creek. So as I kind of zoom in here, you'll see it's a very short up the creek bank, and you're into your stand location. So out of the 10 acres, you know, we're talking about where we actually put any kind of ground intrusion under 1% of this property during hunting season. So as the pressure continues to grow and grow throughout the year on these field edge hunts around this property, we're never going in here, and we have that good habitat, and we're only hunting it on those right winds. So the amount of times they hunted this property was very little. I know it wasn't in the double digits. I think they had between 5 or 6 actual hunts on the property throughout the course of the season, but they were just kind of building that base, building the confidence for these deer to navigate through this timber during those daylight hours. And it really turned into that sanctuary type feel.
Yeah, certainly takes a ton of discipline for that. Walk me through a couple of the setups here. The one there to the north, on the north side of the property, that one really, really catches my attention.
This was a nice spot.
That one right there looks like the money spot. So tell me what's going on
here. Yeah, I think as time progresses and they continue to develop this habitat and deer continue to get more comfortable, they're going to have a lot of really good success at this location up here. You're going to see that this long blocker system that we set up really pinches down deer movement to enter into the ag field out here to the west in one of two locations. You know, obviously there's going to be some areas that they can slip through, but just from the fact of let's provide them with the easiest path of travel, that's what the north and the south corners are really able to do. And as I mentioned, you know, not having a lot of those resident bucks, this is the perfect spot. There was already really good activity along this field edge as deer kind of just progress through naturally. So by really adding in, we added in a mock scrape in both the water hole here, and this is really thick field side brush. So we were able to come in here and do a lot of clearing to open up these corridors, and we immediately split it here. So that way, really regardless of the variation of the wind, a buck could enter into the property and he could go on either side of these bedding areas, or vice versa. If he wants to leave the property, he can do so on either side, and it connects right down into this location, and it sets up very good for that really nice pinch point right in bow range. We're able to monitor the activity here. There was a lot of buck activity during November. Unfortunately, it was at the time when they were on their out-of-state hunting trips, but nonetheless, like, we know that in the future, this is going to be that really good location.
Right, right. All right, Sam, any thoughts, feedback, questions?
Yeah. One of the things I like is only having one water hole, it can be tempting to try and put more in, but keeping that ratio in mind of, you know, like on a 40 acre property, we might only have three or four and use them very intentionally, but you have 10 acres, you know, you probably should only have one. I mean, it'd be a strange application to have more than one. And I like that you've done that at what is really probably the best focal point for, you know, the best pinch point that you have there for travel. That blocker on the west side or the top of the screen that you have there, that is, I think you could easily do a fence too. Like if somebody was worried about the property line and falling trees and some of the issues there, they could also use a fence. And I think I've been doing more of that in my designs as well. So that's another application that you have. And the other thing I just jotted down here too, a property this size, but it emphasizes this for all properties, and I'd say smaller ones in general, is let the cameras do the work. You can, this property of this size, you really get to the point where you can almost have surveillance rather than just cameras, right? You could just with even half a dozen cameras or three of the best spots here, you could have a really good idea of the activity. And I think it's important to keep a log, you know, track where that's at. I know I have a guy who his target buck, he is, every picture he has, he's got a spreadsheet of where it was, the wind conditions, the temperatures, the this and that. And I think if you're doing that, you'll recognize those situations where it would be repeatable. In any small property, creating more of a surgical hunt, you go in there with a very high probability of success because you've been paying attention to what's going on and you haven't messed with the property. So they're not suspecting anything.
Yep. And that's exactly what led to success on this property this year. I'm glad you noted that, because this little C icon right here, that's a trail camera that overlooked this late season plot. And they were kind of really wrapped up on the property, not really thinking much of it for the rest of the year. And then all of a sudden this buck started showing up. He showed up one day, came out. So you'll see this scrape location right in the middle of this plot right here. There's a really big maple tree and we hung a scrape underneath of it. So it's a frequented area, especially with where these two corridors kind of connect down right here. So that's why we have the trail camera right in the center of this plot. But got this buck that showed up one day about a week before the muzzleloader season opened. And then like clockwork, about a half an hour before dark, every single day he started showing up. So it was very obvious for them that I can come into here. This was their gun location. I can come into here on that first day of muzzleloader season. It's very low impact. I'm not going to really have any worry about the deer knowing I'm going to be there because I'm far away. And they were able to walk in there on the first day of muzzleloader season, and out he came, just like he had been every single day. And with that relative amount of confidence that they were going to have success, that's exactly what they did.
Wow. Any idea where he was bedding?
Exactly. We think it was in the center one right here, actually, just because of he would always come out, whether or not, you know, he came from another one, he would always come right down this corridor, pretty much come right out underneath this maple tree. This was just a really direct line. He was always in and out of this same spot every single day. So we're pretty sure, you know, it could have been this one, but more than likely it seemed like it was this guy right here, and he would just loop in and come right under that maple and just kind of browse his way either down or up. And that was his daily routine and took advantage of it.
That's amazing. I love that. What did the cameras show for the rest of the season? I'm just curious, with a property like this that, you know, early season feels like it could be a tough go in this area, simply because of all the food, but they also cover, so there's opportunity.
Yep. Early season, it did seem like some opportunities presented themselves. And one of the things that we're going to be keeping tabs on here year over year is how things change based off the crop rotation. So for this year, this was a corn field and this was a bean field. If we anticipate those to be flip-flop this year, we have all of that data from the first year, because like what Sam mentioned, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 different trail camera locations on this property. We have a really good idea of what's going on here pretty much at all times. So as that flip-flops, how are things going to change? And since we already have that data from year one, what is that going to look like now in year two? But from the early season perspective, this right here, this was a very good location, because what this little plot turned into was a staging area as the deer entered out into this field in the evening time. Whether or not they were feeding in this cornfield, or I don't know if they were coming and crossing over and working just the edge, there was a lot of activity every single evening funneling through this plot coming out into this field. Only problem was, it was never a buck that checked the box of, I want to go out here and throw a soot at this, I'm going to go and look somewhere else. So, you know, they spend a lot of time hunting outside of the property, so that's a benefit for these guys. But I think that down in here will provide them with a lot of those really good early season opportunities, considering that it's a buck that they want to chase after, because I think that's just a reality of putting a design and improving the habitat on a small property. There may be times that you just don't have a buck you want to target, depending on what your goals are. And if that's the case, it's better off to just go and find another place to hunt.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about that. I feel like that's really important for pretty much anybody, but especially those with a smaller property. And so tell me maybe how you kind of point clients who have a smaller property and you say, hey, you know, there are certain times you really shouldn't be hunting on your place. You need to go find somewhere else. Where are you pointing them?
It depends. You know, it's so situational. It depends on the actual client themselves. You know, for a couple guys like this, you know, that I personally do hunting trips with, I know what their capabilities are. It's nothing for them to just go out there and challenge their skills and try to pound out some public land and see if they can have success out there. But you know, for somebody that maybe isn't that run and gun style, and you're not really ambitious and wanting to go and pound the hills and chase deer all over the place, whether it be just working out with a local landowner to maybe you have a local farmer that's looking for some does to be thinned out, and you can go and make that happen on another surrounding property, or just you know, maybe finding something else to do. It's just the thing that I've learned the most, especially on these small properties, is that if the hunting conditions don't line up, you're going to do more harm than good by going in there. So even not doing anything can sometimes be the right thing. And that is growing as a hunter, is realizing that. So even if it means just taking the day off and just understanding, like, this is the right thing for my property, sometimes that's the best thing that you can do.
Right. Yeah. Sink that time into honeydews or the other things you're neglecting during hunting season.
Yeah. Build up those points.
That's right. You take your wife on a date or something like that. She's like, oh, you're right. Not hunting today? No, you on a date.
That's world-class advice right there. I'm going to forego my day of hunting to help you out.
Yeah, that's right. Good stuff. So tell me about the rut activity. I know you said there to the northern corner, there was some good activity going on. So what did this property see kind of middle of the season?
Middle of the season, there was never enough consistency in the middle part of the season to have the confidence to go in there and hunt. You know, and really outside of this northern location where we have that really good pinch point, there really wasn't another rut location that felt, again, that level of confidence to come in here and hunt. There definitely was activity in the middle part of the season. This little corridor here, you see, we opened this up, we kind of carved out the bank on this so the deer could come down, cross the creek, and come out into this field on the other side. That saw some activity. The only problem was there really wasn't a rhyme or reason to why the deer were doing it. So never really any reason for them to go in there. But the thing that was very interesting to us, which we really hung our hat on, was through these few bedding area improvements and a well-organized travel corridor system, it seemed that we were able to hold deer on the property all year long. You know, very rarely did we have a day where one of these trail cameras didn't at least pick up a doe or a doe and a couple yearlings, whatever that may look like. So it seemed like at very minimal, it was going to house a permanent doe family, which in my opinion on 10 acres, you know, that's a really big benefit. And I don't think that's the case for any of these surrounding woodlots. So to know that you have the confidence that your property is going to hold at least one doe family throughout the year gives me enough confidence to know that at some point in time, I'm going to have some bucks visiting these properties.
Right. And we'll just continue to get better, I'm sure, with this property, with this design. Anything left that they have to do, or is this plan fully implemented?
It's pretty well wrapped up. You know, that's the nice thing about a small property is when you have to do this on 10 acres and you got, for in their case, like I said, it's two brothers. So they were able to get out there and really just hammer down, get to work. And now it's just TLC work. And I know we kind of touched on this in our last episode, but going through and identifying, okay, you know, are there any other opportunities on this property? I know that we kind of talked about it a little bit before we started recording amongst the three of us about, is there any kind of opportunity to come and punch in here on an east wind? And that wasn't in the cards year one, probably won't be in year two, but you know, maybe right now it's worth going in and seeing with another trail camera, maybe opening up a section of this blocker system going out into the field right in the middle part. And maybe there is an opportunity to add in a stand location for an east wind if they can come up and access the field that. So, you know, for the most part, it's implemented and now it's just making those tweaks and adjustments and identifying those opportunities in between what we have laid out here.
Excellent. Sam, any last minute thoughts or questions that you've got on the property?
No, I mean, when you have a nice little one like this, it's nice to have a few hunts close to home and be able to run out there and do it. So don't overlook that little chunk of woods, whether it's your property, a neighbor's property, whatnot, that could be hunted. Maybe it's a neighborhood property and get permission on even some of these things you can do and help that landowner understand the value of those improvements. They might give you permission to even do this on a small property. So don't overlook that.
Yeah. Very, very good. Well, awesome. Greg, well done, man. It's awesome to see. So folks, if you're watching this, hopefully you watched it on our YouTube channel. And so if you're watching this or you're just listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, do I have enough ground? We've shown right here, you've got enough ground if you've got some timber behind your house to do something on to improve it for whitetails and make your hunting just a little bit better. If you haven't already, go check out our YouTube channel where you can find this and a lot more design breakdowns. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you found this helpful, do us a favor and leave us a review wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you want to keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at whitetail_partners, on Facebook, Whitetail Partners LLC, on YouTube by simply searching Whitetail Partners, or online at whitetailpartners.com.